you have the cask ready?
Master, I beg you, please. Not that cask, not that cask. It's just not right.
Nonsense, Igor. It's just what I need for my masterpiece. A whiskey such as no one has ever tasted before. This precious direct from the A.B. Normal Distillery. Aged 5 years and 14 months in a warm wood barrel used for storing perfume. It's brilliant, I tell you.
Madness, you ask me.
Now, let's open the cask. It's alive!
Welcome to Whiskey Cast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie, and this is episode number 171 for, as you might have guessed from all the silliness, November 2nd, Halloween weekend 2008. And this time around, we'll be going inside the blending lab, not with our mad scientists, but with some of the whiskey industry's leading innovators, the folks at Buffalo Trace Distillery. In fact, Buffalo Trace was just honored as Innovator of the Year in the U.S. round of Whiskey Magazine's 2009 Icons of Whiskey Awards. That's coming up in a few minutes. But first, let's look at the rest of the news. Whiskey Magazine is celebrating its 10th anniversary this weekend at Whiskey Live Glasgow. And since I've already mentioned Buffalo Trace's award in the U.S. Icons of Whiskey Awards, let's go through the other winners in both the U.S. and Scottish rounds. Heaven Hill won Distiller of the Year and Visitor Attraction of the Year. You can find out more about the Distillery and Visitors Center in episode 167 from last month. Beam Global's whiskey professors were named the Ambassadors of the Year in the U.S. You've heard from Bernie Lubbers in past episodes of Whiskey Cast as well. Linnell's in Brooklyn, New York was named Single Store Retailer of the Year for the second year in a row. And Binney's in Chicago was named Retail Chain of the Year. In Scotland, Ben Riach was named Distiller of the Year, and you can hear my interview with Ben Riach's Billy Walker in episode 164. Colin Scott of Shivas Brothers was named Ambassador of the Year, and there was a tie for visitor attraction between Ardbeg and the Doers World of Whiskey located at Aberfeldy Distillery. Glenmorangie was named Innovator of the Year for its new Signet single malt, and you can hear my interview with Dr. Bill Lumsden on the origins of Signet in episode 162. Among the retailers, Gordon & MacPhail was named Best Single Store Retailer, Peckham's & Rye Best Multiple Store Retailer, Lochfine Whiskey's Best Online Retailer, and Sainsbury's the Best Whiskey Supermarket. Now all of those winners will go into the worldwide competition, along with regional winners to be named yet from Ireland, Japan, Canada, and a worldwide category. The winners will be announced on March 5th before the start of Whiskey Live London. Bruichladdich is releasing several more new single malts, including the first official bottling of whiskey produced after the distillery reopened in 2001. The Resurrection Dram has a slightly heavier peat level than regular Bruichladdich expressions, at about 10 parts per million, and was aged in American oak barrels. It's being released this week worldwide, along with a new 21-year-old sherry cask expression aged in Oloroso butts that will replace the current 20-year-old bourbon-aged Bruichladdich. There's also a one-off Golder still that was aged in experimental squat bourbon casks for 23 years. It'll sell for about $300 a bottle when it hits the market later this month. Back in episode 141 last April, Bern Stewart's Ian McMillan told us about his Deanston 12-year-old single malt. Now distribution of the 12-year-old is being expanded outside the U.S., back to the U.K. and Europe. It's a non-chill filtered malt bottled at 46.3% ABV. There's also a new Deanston single malt that will be bottled at 40% exclusively for 100 Marks & Spencer stores in the U.K. In the last episode, we heard from Bal Blair's John McDonald, and now his colleagues at Inverhouse are about to get a lot busier. Inverhouse is owned by Thailand-based International Beverage, but the Inverhouse team in Airdrie has been so successful that the company is making Airdrie the global marketing hub for all of InBev's drinks brands around the world. Last time around also, I mentioned three new Glengoyne limited edition malts. This week, the folks at Glengoyne have a new version that will go exclusively to the duty-free market. The 14-year-old Heritage Gold will eventually replace the Glengoyne 10-year-old at duty-free shops worldwide. There's also a new 18-year-old version of the Smokehead single malt. Smokehead Extra Black will be available in UK stores as well as the duty-free market. A few new bottlings to report this week from James MacArthur and Company's Old Masters series. The new releases are all bottled at cask strength and include a 30-year-old from Glenlivet, 26 and 13-year-old Kalilas, and an 18-year-old from Linkwood. Also on the independent front, there's a brand new independent bottler making its debut this week at Whiskey Live South Africa in Cape Town. Yossi Schwartz is releasing three single malts worldwide under his Single and Single label.
Single and Single comes from a very famous book of John Le Carré about human weaknesses, and where everything is not perfect. So as much as I'm trying to make my whiskey perfect, I'm fully aware that there are probably hidden weaknesses everywhere. I'm trying to be humble, Single and Single, every bottle carries the distillery, of course, the distillery in the year, so the Glencadden 1991, Beaumont 2000, and Bonnehaven in 1976.
How did you decide to get into the whiskey business, Yossi?
I've been in advertising for 20 years. I needed a change. And I just love it for many, many years. And I thought that it will be an interesting exercise. I actually a single malt lover for many, many years, as many as I can remember. And the truth is that the story was I was on a flight from New York to London. And I came across an article on small micro distilleries that I thought was very interesting. I've done my research, got to the conclusion that it would be very difficult to establish a micro distillery in South Africa. We don't have the weather, we don't have the water, we don't have the ingredients. But then I came across some unbelievable stock of single malts and people that hold some casks that I thought were very interesting. I know a few things about branding and I think about marketing. And I put all the ingredients together and I got into a bottle of some very special single malts.
Tell me about the malts you've bottled so far.
I have three expressions. I have the Glencadden 16 years old. Highlands, very calm, very relaxed, very gentle, very sophisticated, a bit of mandarin and butterscotch, a long aftertaste. I have the Beaumont. I always wanted to make a Beaumont. Beaumont for me was the school, the basics. So I have a Beaumont 8 years old. That is a 46%. All of them are unchilled, of course. That is very sweet and very smoky, very much in your face, bold, aggressive, with oomph. And the last but not least is the Bonnehaven, 31 years old, that is very honey, dark chocolate, very thick, almost syrupy. Full of nose and very rare. So all in all, the Glencadden was 3,800 bottles, the Beaumont 890, and the Bonnehaven, that is a sherry cask, cask strength, only 560 bottles.
And where are they available? Just in South Africa? Or,
No. In London, you will be able to find them in London and in Germany, in Austria, in Canada, and in Japan. But again, in a very limited release, very limited edition. Every bottle is numbered. I can almost tell you who bought every one of my bottles. And please don't drink them. They're too good.
Are they still available?
Yes. Yes. They actually going into distribution now in the next few days. South Africa, we are going to launch next week in the Whiskey Live in Cape Town. London will start distributing in the next 10 days. London, the rest of Eastern Europe, the rest of Europe, Japan, and Canada. So the next 10 days is when it's going to be distributed.
There's a link for more details at the WhiskeyCast website. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. There are several new events added to the calendar in New York City over the next few days, focused around Malt Advocates Whiskey Fest on the 11th. John Glazer of Compass Box will host a tasting at Union Square Wines on November 5th. The Astor Center will hold a special class on American craft whiskeys with Ethan Kelly of the Brandy Library on the 7th, and the library will have a Ben Riach tasting with Alistair Walker on the 10th, a tasting of Duncan Taylor bottlings with Ewan Shand on the 12th, and a Wild Turkey tasting with the legendary Jimmy Russell on the 13th. Linnell's in Brooklyn will hold a Veterans Day whiskey tasting during the afternoon before Whiskey Fest on the 11th as well. I'll be adding more events to the calendar on the WhiskeyCast website as I find out about them, so that's the place to check for the latest updates in and around Whiskey Fest. Elsewhere, Royal Mile Whiskies in London will hold a tasting of Isla Whiskies on the 6th. The U.S. chapter of the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society will hold a single malt extravaganza in Seattle on the 7th. And this coming weekend features the Oslo Whiskey Festival in Norway, the Whiskey Fair in Essen, Germany, and the Spirits in the Sky Festival in Leuven, Belgium. Finally, the Hopscotch Festival in Vancouver gets underway on the 10th and runs through the 15th. You'll find a complete calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig Quarter Cask.
Hi there, my name's John Campbell, Distillery Manager at Laphroaig Distillery. Become a friend of Laphroaig. Claim your own square foot of Isla at laphroaig.com.
The romance of whiskey is in the distillery, but it's in the blending lab where the magic takes place. Remember, even single cask bottlings have to go through the laboratory for tasting and quality control purposes. It's in the lab where casks are selected for blending to produce the whiskeys that make it to our glasses. And the chemists seldom get the credit for their role in the whole process. Truman Cox is the head chemist at Buffalo Trace.
Tell me what it's like working in the lab here.
Kid in a candy shop. A lot of undergraduate practice in college got me here, so it's great being able to not only help the consumer to get the best possible whiskey, but there's a lot of things that we get to work with here that maybe will never hit consumer shelves, so it's very exciting.
Such as?
Picking the experimental collections, going through them with Chris Comstock and our master distiller, Harlan Wheatley. Obviously, we're looking for the best ones that the consumers will like and a lot of the different ones, but there's a lot of stuff that aren't commercially viable or may not have the best flavors, but it's still interesting being able to see what's going on with them.
Let me put you in an unusual spot here.
Okay.
What's the best whiskey you guys ever put together back here that wasn't commercially viable only because you couldn't make enough of it commercially, but you guys came up with a whiskey that you said was amazing?
My personal favorite, and it has not necessarily been a critical favorite, but the one that we came up with that has been my favorite whiskey of all time was our six-year-old Chardonnay wine barrel aged bourbon. We did release that as an experimental collection just because of logistics. It's not going to be something we can make a lot of ever, but for me, it was just a phenomenal. The fruits of the Chardonnay, and I'm a red wine drinker, so I like the big, bold, dry fruits, but with the real fruity Chardonnay married very well with the dryness of a bourbon, and I just think it brought out the best aspects of both.
Now, that did not get critically reviewed well, but also because it's not a traditional bourbon in the classic sense, primarily, right?
Exactly. That's what I feel. I think everybody's looking for a real big, robust bourbon, which is Buffalo Trace is really well known for, is our Stag and the Van Winkles. And it wasn't a big, robust. It was more of kind of a fruity, easier drinking. The complexities weren't traditional bourbon.
How did you get your start here?
I originally started with the vodka industry. I worked for one of the main major producers of grain neutral spirits. We were supplying both Buffalo Trace and a lot of the other distilleries with some of their vodka bases, and just working with Buffalo Trace and knowing that vodka is as boring as it is, I wanted to work with something that was, had a lot more flavor, and had been coming down and meeting a lot of the distillers and ended up at Buffalo Trace.
What's the best part about working in a whiskey lab?
Tasting every day. Just not only the tasting, but the variety of the things we get to taste, not only our own products, but obviously going out and looking at other people's products and having a... being able to buy bottles on somebody else's budget.
Truman and I managed to keep most of the technical language out of our discussion, but there's one term you need to know about. Flocculation sounds vaguely dirty, but in fact it's just a little hazy. It's the term for the haze that can develop over time when water is added to bring whiskey down to bottling strength, unless a whiskey is filtered. Now, flocculation is a pet peeve for retailers, but filtering is a pet peeve for chemists like Truman Cox.
There are things in the alcohol, in the whiskey when it's dumped out of the barrel, that are alcohol soluble but not necessarily water soluble. The industry standards always said these are fatty acids, and for the most part that is true. And what these fatty acids do, they add that mouth coating thickness to a bourbon. This is why a lot of people like their uncut unfiltereds, like Stag, the William Lew Weller, Thomas Handy, Booker's that's out there as well. But once water is added to whiskey as it comes out of the barrel at, say, 130 proof, and we cut it down to 90 proof, these fatty acids are no longer water-soluble, and they start coming out and look like a thick haze. And if left for long enough on a shelf, it'll end up looking like a little bit of scum on the bottom, or they actually flocculate out. So it's more for an aesthetic reason that these things have to be filtered. We understand, or at least I understand, that the general public is looking for an unfiltered whiskey to get all that full flavor. But as we cut things down to the normal bottling proof, it's going to create that haze. It's just not going to look appealing to your average consumer on the shelf. One of the things that Buffalo Trace is involved in is we're doing a lot of studying on, or a lot of study and a lot of research on different types of filtration using cyclones and centrifuges, different types of filtering material, whether fiberglass, natural cellulose, and trying to fine-tune our filtering so that we're only taking out the particles that will create a haze in the bourbon over a long time, but still leaving as much full flavor as possible. We think we've hit on the best at this time with the what we have available. We have what we consider the best specifications. We're giving the most full flavor and still produce an aesthetically pleasing bottle on the shelf.
So when people complain that, hey, the whiskey's filtered, you have a compromise between keeping the average whiskey consumer happy and keeping the connoisseurs happy.
That is correct. And in part, in fact, in a large part, that's the reason we release things like the Stag, the Weller, and the Thomas Handy in an uncut, unfiltered, to really get that connoisseur and introduce the full flavor available to the average consumer.
There are a few other unsung heroes who work in the lab. Most distilleries have a tasting panel of staff members who review cask samples as part of the quality control process. You'll never meet these folks at a whiskey festival, but they play a bigger role in the process of selecting your whiskeys than you'll ever know. Dendris Enos is part of the panel at Buffalo Trace.
Well, I just was looking for a job one day, and they said go down to the distillery, and I came over, and it was tasting whiskey, and I had no experience with whiskey whatsoever. And they showed me how to taste, and sometimes it takes a little while, years, before you get a good taste bud for a whiskey, because there's different ages, and there's different types, and eventually you develop a good palate for tasting whiskey.
How did you develop yours?
Well, through a lot of tasting. a lot of taste, and we taste a lot of Blanton. We taste on the average around about at least 46 barrels a day of Blanton. So that right there gives you a real good range of taste.
Now, I'm looking at this table, and I see probably, what, about 20 different samples right now?
Yes, sir. We have 23 samples out right now that we taste, and that'll be a lot for us. We normally, if our table could accommodate more, we would taste more, but our table accommodates only 23.
And how will you go through all these?
Well, we'll taste them individually, and what you do is you might want to taste one, and then you might want to sip a little water, then spit out. And then go all the way around. You taste the whiskey, and you might want to, in between, you might want to rinse out with water. And when it comes to a sample that's immature, you might want to set it aside and put it back for later reference.
How do you decide whether it's immature or not?
Well, a lot of times we have whiskey that's 36-month-old. And if it tastes sort of corny or spirity-like, we know that it's immature.
What else are you looking for when you're evaluating spirits?
We also look for if it's moldy or if it's sour. Very rarely do we have any moldy or sour barrels, though.
Now, you're tasting these straight, no water, right?
We cut these samples down. They come in at around about 130 proof, and we cut them down to around about 45 proof.
And then you'll decide whether they go back to the warehouse for more aging or whether they're ready to bottle, right?
Yeah, if they're immature, we'll send them back to the warehouse. Or if the flavor's off, we'll send them back to the warehouse and let them sit for, you know, at least a couple more years. And perhaps if they mature by then, we'll bring them back and taste them again.
Of all the range, which one do you like the most?
Of all the ones, I like the Blanton. At least around about 8 years old. That's about when it has its the most highest maturity in flavor to me. After a while, after 8 years old, whiskey tends to be sort of woody tasting.
Now you're saying it gets kind of woody after about 8 years. What about some of the older whiskeys that you have around here?
Well, those are good also. It depends on your taste, but if you like 23-year-old whiskey, we have that also. And those whiskeys tend to be woody, and some people like that dry, woody taste in whiskey, that bite that the older whiskeys have. And it just depends on your taste, bud.
You prefer more of the younger sweetness whiskey?
Yes, I do.
The 8-year-old Blanton's is what you normally drink when you're at home?
Yes, it's pretty good.
You've had the chance also to taste with guys like Julian Van Winkle and Elmer Healy. Tell me what it's like sitting down and tasting with these guys.
Well, they're very exceptional tasters. They taste very well. And what I try to learn from them from tasting also, when they tell me something's immature, I taste it. And so it gives me a better indication of what I should be looking for.
When have you told them something they didn't know?
Well, a lot of times Mr. Van Winkle will come in and he's looking for a barrel that's very exceptional. And he likes to get my opinion on it to see what I think about it. And normally him and I, normally if he sets up four barrels and he wants two out of four, normally him and I pick out the same barrels.
That's a pretty good endorsement if you and he are picking out the same barrels for him as well as you.
Yeah, we tend to pick out around about the same flavor.
What's it like working as part of a tasting panel with the other folks here at the distillery?
Well, they're also good. Like, for some guys, we have some people that taste rum very well. And I haven't been able to taste rum that much, although we do bottle rum here a lot. They're more professional about tasting rum. Mr. Mayville, who used to be with another distillery, he's used to tasting rum because he tasted rum a long time ago. He helped formulate rum and these kind of things.
Who taught you? Who gave you your experience?
When I came here, there was a fellow by the name of Gene Cowell, and he showed me how to taste. He showed me immaturity a long time ago, and at the time, I really didn't see immaturity, but after years of tasting and tasting, I finally knew what he was talking about when he talked about immature, that whiskey that has like a hay smell to it, fresh hay smell.
Now, is there anybody you're coaching up along the way?
There's several I'm coaching up along the way. For example, Truman Cox.
I couldn't resist.
I got one other question for you. Dendris tells me he's been coaching you up as far as tasting and nosing. Is that the case?
He's been coaching me, but I'll tell you what. Dendris has been here for over 20 years. He's one of the best whiskey palates I have ever met, including writers. He's been coaching me, and I've come from the vodka industry, so I've been working on it, and I'm catching him, but I don't think I'll ever pass him.
Next time around, we'll get a blender's perspective. I sat down recently with Robert Hicks, the veteran master blender for Laphroaig, Ardmore, and Teachers, and you'll hear that interview on the next episode of Whiskey Cast. One final note. Last time around, I mentioned the Movember campaign to raise money for prostate cancer research. Well, Movember has started. And for the first time ever, I've started growing a mustache to do my part for the campaign. If you'd like to join in, there's a link at the WhiskeyCast website where you can donate by credit card or by PayPal. Please consider a small donation. Even $5 or $10 will help. Thank you for your support. By the way, you'll also find links for this week's episode, the calendar of events, the WhiskeyCast store, my whiskey ratings, and a complete archive of past episodes at the WhiskeyCast website. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. And my email address for questions and suggestions is comments@whiskeycast.com. WhiskeyCast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2008, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.